That's the paradox, that academic standards are leading us to concentrate on the less important policies. The worst case scenario is development economists just risk becoming irrelevant because it's concentrating on small issues that policymakers do not think are that important.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. So it's 2 years since Vox Dev launched, and that's a period of rapid global change in economics and politics. We're asking some economists about the economic events of the last 2 years that they think are having the most impact on developing countries. So we're delighted to welcome Bill Easterly. He's the co-director of NYU's Development Research Institute, and he's been challenging the conventional wisdom on how we do development for several decades now, especially you might know from his books, The Tyranny of Experts and The White Man's Burden. Bill, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Hello, Tim. Good to be here.
Now, what do you think has been the most important economic event for developing countries in these last 2 years?
I think there's been a sort of a paradox that there's been these increasing doubts and backlash against globalization and markets, which is extremely important for the policies that affect growth and development. And at the same time, there's actually been quite a lot of what I would think of as progress on policies that are supportive of markets and reverse some of the earlier policies that were destroying markets. And we've seen actually a growth response in Africa and Latin America, especially where those policies have been corrected. So there's a paradox that globalization is actually working better in Africa and Latin America, especially. At the same time, there's an intellectual backlash against it. And we're not researching that also very much these days in the academy. So academic development economists have not had much to say in their research work about the effects of these anti- or pro-globalization policies.
Why do you think there is that gap in the research?
I think that it's for some very good reasons, actually. It's very hard to resolve causality in talking about the effect of macroeconomic policies like very high extreme inflation, for example, and growth outcomes. What we have pretty persuasively are correlations. It's very clear that very high rates of inflation are strongly negatively correlated with growth rates. Where we have very high inflation, like Venezuela is kind of the classic case, we see, you know, really disastrous growth rates and other symptoms like severe hunger and shortages of consumer goods, et cetera, especially when inflation is combined with price controls, as is happening in Venezuela. You know, unfortunately, it's really hard to resolve the causality rigorously. Is it possible that there's some third factor that is making the economy tank and inflation get extremely high? It's certainly possible. Could there be reverse causality that when times are bad, policymakers are more likely to do the things that create high inflation? That's also possible. And so I think that explains the reluctance of academics to do much research these days on the effects of inflation on growth. But we can't censor ourselves to not talk about important issues. I think inflation and growth or globalization and growth are extremely important issues, and we need to do the best we can at shedding light on those issues. And if that comes from non-causal correlation, I think we have an obligation to present those and be honest about how to interpret them.
Across academic economics in general, these issues are being debated.
Sure.
Yet, does it matter that specifically in development economics, perhaps there isn't so much of that research?
Well, I think it matters because the policy debate in development is certainly going to be influenced by what development economists are talking about. Now, if we're not talking about something like extreme destruction of markets by inflation, then we're sort of leaving the field to amateurs and demagogues and those who have vested interest to promote certain policies without saying what we honestly believe as economists is the best opinion that we can bring to the issue. You know, in this case, only based on correlations, that's the best we can do. But I think it's still informative to give another example of anti-market distortions, most cases of extremely high black market premiums on foreign exchange, overvalued exchange rates, severely negative real interest rates on savings deposits. Those policies are also very negatively correlated with inflation. Our theories predict that those policies would have a negative effect on economic growth. We do observe a correlation between economic growth and those policies. And I think that is somewhat informative comparing to just say we know nothing, we're not going to research the issue at all.
There is a lot more empirical research in development economics now. Are you saying that this just isn't big picture enough?
I see most of the academic development literature as concentrating on randomized controlled trials and, you know, small mm-hmm. development interventions that can be tested with randomized controlled trials. That's the sense in which I think there's not enough research on these kind of big picture policies. It does really matter a lot, of course. Right now we have this really sad situation of Zimbabwe relapsing into very high inflation. Zimbabwe had conquered hyperinflation a decade ago, and now, sadly, it's going back in the same direction, and that's going to be very destructive of Zimbabwe's growth and development prospects.
There aren't very many policymakers in the world that would consider what's happening in Venezuela or Zimbabwe as healthy. Does this lack of research mean that there are suboptimal policies across the developing world in general?
It's certainly true that not many policymakers and not many academic economists would think of these policies as good policies, what's happening in Zimbabwe and Venezuela. But we've forgotten that these policies used to be very common. Almost 50% of Latin American and African countries, especially where these policies were most common in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, one or another of one of these extreme policies of very high inflation and black market premiums, overvalued exchange rates, severe trade tariffs and quotas, negative real interest rates, etc. That's what led to the infamous Washington Consensus being developed in 1990. Mm. And there is a widespread discourse that that Washington Consensus had failed. I actually wrote some articles to that effect myself. And since then, what has happened is what you described. Despite the so-called failure of the Washington Consensus, a lot of those policies were corrected anyway, probably partly because the policymakers just got more rational and better economics was brought to bear on these questions. And these policies disappeared, and they did have a strong correlation with the revival of growth, where they disappeared. And yet in the academic literature, we just stopped paying attention. We no longer really have much research bearing on the question of big macroeconomic policies or retrospectives of the Washington Consensus or any of that.
What could we do to incentivize more of this research?
Oh, I think not penalize research that fails to resolve causality so severely as we do now. I think now we're sending a message in the academic literature that we're only interested in papers that have a really rigorous resolution of causality. And that's a very good thing in many, many ways. Any young economist who's trying to get tenure, I certainly would not advise them to do anything but research based on rigorous resolution of causality in their own research design. But some questions just don't lend themselves to resolving causality that rigorously, like these ones that we're talking about, of macroeconomic policies and growth. It's really hard to think of ways that we could decisively resolve that causality, and yet we still have a lot to say as economists about that. So I think we just need to be a little more open-minded in our methodologies, that correlations that are just stylized facts are also useful pieces of evidence.
Is the risk with this that we end up with very high-quality academic research that is ignored by the people doing policymaking and therefore that economics becomes separated from what's actually implemented or what's politically feasible?
I think that risk is actually happening right now. I think the policymakers are not as interested in randomized controlled trials as the researchers are. They see all this development research being produced on really small programs that policymakers are not that interested in. Policymakers want things that have substantial effects on development prospects. And you're not going to get that from some program to improve teacher attendance in schools through taking photographs of the teachers. That's a famous research study that was a very valuable study, but it's probably not the kind of thing that is at the top of policymakers' priorities to install cameras in classrooms to improve teacher attendance. That's a pretty small effect on the development program of a country. They probably would like things that have much bigger effects on economic growth and development, and we're currently not really doing much research that would be useful to them in that area.
Is there any research that you would pull out to say this is a really good model of what we should be doing more of? For example, we've interviewed Daran Osamoglu for this series, and he does pretty big picture stuff, and he has got a lot of attention for that.
Oh yeah, he's a big exception to what I'm talking about.
Is there anything else that you could think of that you would hold up and say, we should have more of this?
Oh, yeah, my own research.
Tell us a little bit about that, Bill. Tell us about what you're doing at the moment.
All this talk that I've been giving you about inflation and negative real interest rates and black market premiums, that's what I'm working on myself at the moment. And those statements that I made about strong correlations between reforms in those areas and growth recoveries is what I've been finding in work that I'm doing now.
Do you have to struggle to make your voice heard?
Well, again, there's this paradox that development economists really do want to talk about these things. And so it's easy to get them to talk about it and get them really interested in the issue. But it's very difficult to publish this kind of research in journals these days because of the insistence only research that resolves causality in some very rigorous, decisive way can be published. And so that does, as I've been trying to argue, does just leave out whole big questions where causality is not easily resolved. And yet, we really don't want to just stop talking about the effect of globalization on growth or democracy on growth. That's the paradox, that academic standards are leading us to concentrate on the less important policies. And the more important policies, we're not as able to incentivize researchers to work on these areas because currently the academic literature is not rewarding that kind of research. I can do it because I have tenure and I can work on what I want. But it's sad that some of the brightest young minds in our field are sort of not allowed to work on those topics because they have to do things like randomized trials where they can claim that causality is resolved.
Would it help if some of the multilateral development banks or the World Bank, the IMF, pushing for more of this research?
I mean, I'm very critical of the IMF and the World Bank in many ways, but I think they're not that bad on this issue. Mm-hmm. They're so close to the front lines in policy that they really are interested in this kind of research, even if it is only correlations. I see the problem that I'm talking about really more existing in the academic literature in the sense of what is getting published in the journals.
What do you think might happen then, Bill? What's the worst case scenario here?
The worst case scenario is development economists just risk becoming irrelevant because it's concentrating on small issues that policymakers do not think are that important.
How likely do you think that is to happen?
I think it already is happening. I think this kind of disjunction between the randomized trials, they are very useful for NGOs and for some official aid agencies that have kind of these small programs that they want to know are having good results. That's very positive development that we have a methodology that can help those NGOs and aid agencies. But policymakers are not that interested in what little NGOs are doing to promote development. They want big national actions that are positive for development that might come from something like institutional reforms for democracy or correction of macroeconomic policies that are destroying the economy.
Bill Easterly, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
This has been a Vox Dev Talk. If you want to hear more in this series, or indeed any of our Vox Dev Talks from the last 2 years, subscribe on your podcast platform or visit voxdev.org.